Hollywood Bowl, Hollywood, California, Wednesday evening, June 30th. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking to you from the scene of the spectacular ceremonies launching the Build the Cruiser Los Angeles campaign, which will be conducted throughout the county of Los Angeles during the month of July. Tonight's gathering has been arranged under the auspices of the Motion Picture Committee for Hollywood Treasury Department, which is the motion picture industry's own bond-selling organization and is representative of all working branches of the industry. Major and independent studios, writers, directors, and actors' guilds, labor, talent agents, freelance publicists, business managers, and all allied enterprises. Seated here on the podium are such famous Hollywood personalities as Bing Crosby, Dinah Shore, Betty Hutton, Burns and Allen, Catherine Grayson, Joseph Segatti, Hazel Scott, the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard bands under the direction of Lieutenant Rudy Valley, with Edward G. Robinson as Master of Ceremonies. The feature address of the evening will be delivered by Secretary of the Navy, the Honorable Frank Knox. Now, as our service color guard comes to attention, Lieutenant Valley raises his baton, and the capacity crowd here in the bowl rises as Catherine Grayson steps forward to sing the national anthem. Thank you, Miss Grayson, for your lovely rendition of our national anthem. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my great privilege to present your Master of Ceremonies for the evening. Recently back from a tour of the European Theater of War for the Office of War Information and an extended national bond-selling campaign, one of Uncle Sam's and Hollywood's most dynamic and articulate spokesmen, Edward G. Robinson.
More than three quarters of a century ago, a young American poet wrote these words: "Sail, sail thy best, ship of democracy. Of value is thy freight. 'Tis not the present only, the past is also stored in thee." Ship of democracy. The ship Walt Whitman referred to in 1852 was more than a figure of speech, a state of mind. It referred to a country, a fine young country, a country which today is being defended to the death by thousands of ships, ships of steel and might. Each one, a literal ship of democracy. And we who have gathered here tonight have done so with the express purpose of giving birth to another such ship. I refer to the fighting cruiser of the United States Navy, the USS Los Angeles. The population of the community of Los Angeles is close to 2 million people. If everybody buys only one $25 bond in July, Our cruiser will have the largest land crew of any ship in the United States Navy. 2 million godfathers and godmothers. 2 million rooters. 2 million stockholders. I know we'll do our part, all of us, to assure the launching of the USS Los Angeles. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to launch our show, which, by the way, has at least $40 million worth of talent in it. I take great pleasure in banging the bottle of champagne against the noggin of one who has done her part in scores of shows for the men of the United States Five Forces. Whenever she shows up, the boys cry out, "Praise the Lord, here comes the ammunition. Look out, here comes that human bombshell, Betty Hutton."
Finally found a fella, almost completely divine. But his vocabulary is killing this romance of mine. We get into an intimate situation, and then begins this Romeo's conversation. He says, "Murder," he says, every time we kiss. He says, "Murder," he says, at a time like this. He says, "Murder," he says, "is that the language of love?" He says, "Solid," he says, takes me in his arms and says, "Solid," he says, meaning all my charms. He says, "Solid," he says, "is that the language of love?" He says, "Chick, chick, you torture me. Zoot, are we living? I'm thinking of leaving him flat." He says, "Dig, dig, the jumps, the old ticker is skipping." Now he can talk plainer than that. He says, "Murder," he says, every time we kiss. He says, "Murder," he says, keep it up like this. And that "murder," he says, in that impossible tone, will bring on nobody's murder but his own. He says, "Jackson," he says, "and my name's Marie." He says, "Jackson," he says, "cue the snoot to me." He says, "Jackson," he says, "is that the language of love?" He says, "Wop, wop," he says, when he likes my hat. He says, "What the heck is that?" He says, "Woo, woo," he says, "is that the language of love?" He says, "Hep, hep, with helium, now, babe, we're cooking," and other expressions to wit. He says, "We're in de groove, and de groove is good looking." He sounds like his uppers don't fit. He says, "Murder!" He says, "Murder!" Energized that he's shouting in an impossible tone. I've told him over and over and over again that it'll be nobody else's murder. Boy, but his own.
Well, now you know what they mean when they say vitamin B takes Betty Hutton. Betty will be back with us in a few minutes, but first we're happy to present Lieutenant Rudy Valley, leading the U.S. Coast Guard Band in its own special arrangement of El Capitan. When our ship slides down the ways and begins its battle against the enemy, it will be fighting for the American way of life. The way of life that includes the four freedoms. Freedom from want, freedom from fear, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. But we hope that our ship will be fighting for a fifth and a very important freedom. Not only typically American, but typical of all free people. The freedom to laugh.
And who has been more generous in supplying this precious commodity than our own George Burns and Gracie Allen?
Hello, Rudy. Hello, Eddie.
I'm fine, George.
Gracie,
how are you?
You know Eddie Robinson.
Oh, yes, Mr. Robinson. Hello.
Hello, Gracie.
Oh, yeah, I admire your work so much. I've seen all your pictures, you know.
Oh, have you really? Well.
Yes. You make love to all the picture stars, don't you?
Well, yes.
Look, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Will you tell me, is it a thrill to kiss Errol Flynn?
Good night, George.
Yes. Good night, Eddie.
Good night.
Not a thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad we're here. We really had a rush to make this worthy cause. And what happened, we just came from Glendale.
Oh, George, I just found out the Secretary of the Navy's here.
That's right, he's out front.
Oh, what a job that must be.
Yes.
Secretary of the Navy.
Yeah, that's quite a job. Yeah.
Oh, imagine sitting in all those sailors' laps taking dictation.
Gracie, that's not what the Secretary of the Navy does.
Oh, no?
No, I think the planes are coming.
Oh, well, let's wait, huh?
Let's wait and see them. Are they coming?
Ladies and gentlemen, as Lieutenant Rudy Valley directs the band in the Army Air Corps March, we pay tribute to the Army Air Corps as planes fly over Hollywood Bowl here.
Well, anyway, we finally got here from Glendale.
Yes, we went to Glendale. Do I hear him? Do you hear that?
Oh, as I was saying, I'm still in Glendale. I can't get out of Glendale. Well, we finally got here from Glendale.
Oh, yes, you see, my cousin Louise just got married.
That's right.
We always go to Glendale for her weddings, don't we?
We certainly do. We go there about 5 or 6 times a season.
Yes. Didn't you think Louise made a beautiful bride?
Well, I thought she was a mess. Gracie, how old is Louise?
Oh, she's just 21. She's the baby of the family, you know.
The baby? You mean there were some older than she is?
Oh, sure. Her twin brother is 40.
40? Well, in your family, that could happen.
Louise comes from a very big family. 14 children.
14 children?
7 sets of twins.
7 sets of twins? You mean every time a mother had children, she had 2?
Oh, sure. Well, you see, Louise's father's business was making bookends, and it affected his whole life.
Well, it's a good thing he didn't make Thousand Island dressing.
Yeah.
Yes. Gracie, who was that fellow Louise married?
Oh, Johnny?
Yes.
Oh, he's nice. My sister Bessie used to go with him.
Yes, but what does he do for a living?
Well, he's sort of connected with the Glendale Chamber of Commerce. Their slogan is, Watch Glendale Grow.
Yeah, but what does he do for a living?
He stands on Glendale Boulevard
and watches it grow.
Yes.
Well, that's a nice job. Yes. And who was that fella standing in back of us at the wedding?
Oh, that was Louise's boss, Mr. Wilcox. He's nice. My sister Bessie used to go with him.
Is that so? Well, that was a smart kid, that Wilcox. Everybody was throwing rice by the handful, and he threw it in 5-pound bags.
Yeah. Oh, well, he gets rice wholesale, you know.
He does?
Yeah, he goes to every one of Tommy Manville's weddings.
Oh, is that so? I see what you mean. The janitor will have a nice time cleaning up that mess.
Yeah, Mr. Blodger, the janitor. Yes. Oh, he's nice. My sister Bessie used to go with him.
Yes. Good old Bessie, always a bridesmaid.
Yeah, but didn't Louise look nice coming down the aisle on Mr. Snodgrass's arm?
Yeah, what was that? Well, why on Mr. Snodgrass's arm? I thought her father was supposed to give her away.
Well, he did when she was 2 weeks old. He gave her to Mr. Snodgrass.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Well, it's a good thing he didn't pay a gift tax.
Yes.
That was really a nice wedding.
Oh, yeah. Remember our wedding?
Oh, yes. We got married right here in Los Angeles.
That's right.
We were playing vaudeville then.
Yes.
A split week.
Uh-huh.
And we had a simple little ceremony, and I gave the minister
$2. No, you gave him $5.
No, I gave him $2.
No, George, you gave him $5.
No, Gracie, I gave him 2.
Really?
Hmm.
Well, George, you forgot to give me my change.
Well, I was so excited, I didn't know what I was doing, I guess. And right after the ceremony, remember, we rushed back to the theater just in time to do our next show.
Oh, yeah, and I'll never forget your wedding present. You let me tell 2 of your best jokes that night.
Well, you only get married once.
Oh, yes. Remember, we went to the nicest hotel in town for our honeymoon. Mm. The Knickerbocker.
Yes. Seemed like the nicest hotel in the whole world that night.
Oh, yeah. And you said that I was the most beautiful bride in the whole world.
Mm.
I loved hearing you say that, even though I knew it was true.
Well, Gracie, you are the prettiest bride in the whole world.
Yes, you were the handsomest groom in that room.
It was a nice little hotel, though.
Yes, remember we had the bridal suite 206?
Gosh, you even remember the number of the room.
Oh, sure, it was 206, then came 208, and then 210, and then came the bathroom, and then 212.
Never mind. Was a nice big room.
Yeah. Remember that big window in the front, the one I threatened to jump out of when you made my mother go home?
That was really some honeymoon.
Yes. And we had a nice courtship, too, didn't we?
Mm.
Oh, you were so nice to me then. Why do you treat me now like you're married to me?
Because I am married to you. Preacher conducted a legal ceremony and pronounced us man and wife.
Oh, well, all I can say is he certainly killed a beautiful friendship.
Come on, Gracie, let's go.
Our president recently declared that America was an arsenal of democracy. And how right he was. Yes, we are an arsenal of democracy, but not only in the sense of guns and tanks and planes and bullets. We're also storing a priceless heritage of democratic culture, a culture immeasurably enriched by the inclusion among us of fine new talents who found in America the refuge and freedom to continue their work. A welcome addition to our cultural arsenal of democracy is the next artist, long famous in our country and now about to become one of our citizens, Mr. Joseph Sigetti. Mr. Sigetti plays Dvorak's Slavonic Dance, arranged by Fritz Kreisler. He will be accompanied at the piano by Edward Regner.
There is no music more in the American idiom, more appropriate to this evening of ours, than the music of the late George Gershwin. And there has been no artist more sensitive, more original in the interpretation of this music, than the young lady who graces our stage tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Hazel Scott.
Thank you.
course, you recognize that last number that Miss Scott played as Chopin's Minute Waltz. I've often listened to it, and tonight, out of curiosity, I timed it. According to my watch, it was just 58 seconds. But, of course, that's all right. Chopin won't mind. We're cutting down on everything these days. And now the Coast Guard Band plays the Song of the Marines.
Brought you the first hour of the two-hour broadcast of the ceremonies arranged under the auspices of the Motion Picture Committee for Hollywood, Treasury Department, to launch the Build the Cruiser Los Angeles campaign. We regret that due to other commitments, this station is unable to carry the remainder of the broadcast. This is Neil Reagan, returning you now to the studios of station KFWB. This program is being presented in conjunction with the United States Treasury Department.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you from Hollywood Bowl in Hollywood, California, where a crowd of 20,000 Angelenos has gathered to launch the Build the Cruiser Los Angeles campaign. The ceremonies will be featured by the address of Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox. During the course of the next hour, we shall also bring you on this broadcast such celebrated Hollywood personalities as Edward G. Robinson, Cecil B. DeMille, Bing Crosby, Dinah Shore, and Catherine Grayson, together with the music of the combined service bands of the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard under the baton of Lieutenant Rudy Vallee. Tonight's ceremonies are under the auspices of the Motion Picture Committee for Hollywood Treasury Department, which is the motion picture industry's own bond-selling organization and is representative of all the working branches of the industry, the major and independent studios, the writers, directors and actors guilds, labor, talent agents, freelance publicists, business managers, and all allied enterprises. The next voice you hear will be that of the master of ceremonies, Edward G. Robinson.
Here, under the stars in the Hollywood Bowl, a few fellow citizens, about 20,000 of us, have gathered together to discuss ways and means of selling a minimum of $40 million worth of war bonds during the month of July so we can have a United States cruiser named after the city of Los Angeles. But in a larger sense, The purpose and spirit of this meeting goes far deeper than that. The mood of America has changed a great deal since the days when we were scrapping fighting ships. Today, we're still scrapping ships, but they're enemy ships. After Pearl Harbor, Japan boasted she had destroyed the American Navy. On the contrary, that day that will go down in infamy will also go down as the day in which this nation started on the greatest shipbuilding program in its history and in the history of the world. Our mighty armada has done and is doing its part to win the war. And when victory is won, it will do its part on both oceans and on every sea to preserve the peace. We want to be a part of it. All of us. We can't all be in the crews that man the ships. We can't all be among the workers who build the ships. But we can all buy the bonds that pay for the ships. We can and will buy those bonds, and we know our cruiser will live up to her name. The city of Los Angeles was originally called Nuestra Señora la Reina de Los Angeles, Our Lady, Queen of the Angels. We expect and hope that the cruiser Los Angeles will be Our Lady, Queen of the Fighting Angels of the United States Navy, which is raising hell with the enemy over, on, or under any part of any ocean they can find them. When our ship puts to sea, she's going to have a crew of several hundred fine young men aboard. They'll come from every walk of life, every part of the Union. From the plains of Nebraska to the smokestacks of Pittsburgh. From the cotton fields of Georgia to the grand concourse of the Bronx. But no matter where they hail from, they're pretty much the same. Just a bunch of American boys who like baseball games and hot dogs and secondhand cars and those girls in Esquire. Now, they're the type of guy who'd while away a Sunday afternoon in the local sugar bowl sticking nickels in the jukebox. And when they did, like as not, you'd find they were playing the music of a certain fellow they call the Groaner. Well, they love the Groaner, and so do we. And he's here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Bing Crosby.
Remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story. Fight for love and glory. A case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story. A fight for love and glory. A case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. From a far off clearing in the North Maine woods, a wagon crossing in Ohio, there started a song. Someone added a note, someone added a word, and soon the wide world heard. Oh, glory. Our hopes are in you. Tall timber, blue prairies, they're part of you too. Love made you, brave hearts that are gone, we hail them and we won't fail them. All glory lies
seated on the vast stage here at Hollywood Bowl are 120 members of the combined bands of the Coast Guard, Navy, and Marine Corps. And here's their conductor for the evening, Lieutenant Rudy Valley of the United States Coast Guard.
We'd like to play a medley of sea songs, songs that the United States Navy men would sing. All the nice girls, they like the tar. For there's something about a sailor. Well, you know how the sailors are. They're nice and breezy, free and easy. They're the ladies, pride and joy. They'll go out with Kate and Jane, then go back to sea again. Ship ahoy,
ship ahoy,
sailor boy.
All the nice girls, they like the sailor. All the nice girls, they like the tar. For there's something about a sailor.
For the men of the merchant marine. We are proud to claim the title of United States
built yet, but it's going to be built, and it's going out to sea. And one day it's going to meet and beat the enemy. And though our ship's a long way from home, don't think that our boys are necessarily going to be out of touch with all the good things they left behind. For each week, the War Department beams regularly scheduled shortwave programs to our boys all over the globe. These shows feature the cream of the entertainment world. And typical of those artists who are working so tirelessly for our men overseas is the young lady I am now honored to present, the singing favorite of the AEF, Miss Dinah Shaw.
That old black magic that you weave so well. Those icy fingers up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. The same old tingle that I feel inside. And then I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name and I'm aflame with such a burning desire that only your kiss the fire for the lover I've waited for, the maid that fate had me created for, and every time your lips meet mine, darling. Loving the spin I'm in under that old black magic called love. Do 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 do. I've got cat go sigh about him, cry about him. Lordy, where am I without him? Blue. He makes my dreams go up in smoke, and then he treats it like a joke. He's just an ornery sort of guy, and yet I love him till I die. Poor me. Got those mad about him, sad about him. How can I be glad without him? Blue.
We pause briefly for station identification.
That dinosaur lovely? Oh, boy. And now it's my privilege to present one of California's most prominent and illustrious citizens. Cecil B. DeMille was one of Los Angeles' first settlers, having come here right after they finished building the San Gabriel Mission in 1771. He immediately set up cameras and made the first feature-length picture in the history of California. It's an honor for me to present one of the most beloved and respected figures in our community, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I have here a letter from the grave. It reads, "Posterity, you will never know how much it cost the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it. Signed, John Adams, Second President of the United States." I have delivered his message here because it's addressed to you and me as clearly as if it had our names on the envelope. It is a demand that we keep the faith with our fathers. The freedom they gave us at such a cost is threatened. And now, we too must pay the price of preserving it. When John Adams was president, Los Angeles was only an adobe mission in a wild and far-flung corner of the Spanish Empire. But the city that stands here today is as representative of America as New York or Boston or Philadelphia, and as typical of the American dream. New York has been called the melting pot of Europe. Los Angeles is the melting pot of the United States. All the states are represented here. So are all the big cities, perhaps even most of the small towns. And here, all phases of American life are blended. This is a metropolis, a farming center, a hub of industry, a seaport, and a wellspring of art. This city is a maker of airplanes and a builder of ships, a singer of songs and a driller of oil, a painter of pictures that move, and a weaver of magic carpets on the endless loom of radio. All the accents and dialects of America are heard here. So this is truly an all-American city. Now, we propose to buy $40 million worth of war bonds to build a heavy cruiser called the Los Angeles. Into her will go a little of every part of America, and she will be truly an all-American ship. Of course, it was not to be expected that Los Angeles would want a small cruiser. This city is out to build one that's as big as they come, a super cruiser. Perhaps that's the Hollywood influence. Out here, you know, our taste runs to the super colossal. For years, we've been sending our friends canned art, laughter, and song. We can also send our enemies canned death. That kind of canned goods calls for red, white, and blue ration coupons, known as war bonds, to buy the enemy a super colossal technicolor disaster. The Motion Picture Committee for Hollywood, an instrument of the Treasury Department, has been chosen to play host here tonight to launch the drive for the war bonds that will launch the cruiser Los Angeles. Hollywood is the producer of the show, but all the glamour and talent that it can muster is only the supporting cast or a distinguished guest star. In spite of the myriad cares of global wars and the job of directing the operations of a Navy second to none, this man, whose able fingers extend over the seven seas, has found time to come here from Washington and help us grease the waves of our dream ship and make her come true. He's an old friend of mine, and like most people I am selected to introduce, he needs no introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Frank Knox, Secretary of the United States Navy.
Mr. Robinson and Mr. Bemell, men and women of Los Angeles, I should surely be derelict in a very serious way if I did not at the very outset of this little talk of mine express on behalf of the Navy and the train our sense of appreciation for the moving picture industry for having made possible this splendid evening of entertainment and inspiration. Indeed, I think I should be remiss if I did not take this opportunity on behalf of official Washington, if I may be so bold as to speak for the whole Democratic administration as well as the Republican fragment, the sense of appreciation of all of us who are charged with responsibility in carrying forward the war to the moving picture industry. From the very outset, it has disclosed a type of patriotism that asked no questions. All they wanted to know was what we wanted them to do. And from the very beginnings, they have contributed in a thousand ways to that spirit of patriotic enthusiasm which is so wonderfully expressed by your coming here tonight. And then there's another little matter on my heart which was brought very forcefully to my attention after I arrived in Los Angeles. Now, you know, it's going to take about 1,000 men to man this, what did DeMille call it, super something cruiser that's going to be named the Los Angeles? About 1,000 men. Now, I've got more than 1,000 men, a good many more than 1,000 men, who are doing work around the Navy Department and in the various shore establishments who could go to sea if I could get a bunch of waves to take their places. Now, let me let you in on a little secret. If the Navy isn't run wholly by men. And another secret is there's a lot of work in the Navy that can be done better by women than by men. And so I'd like to add my plea that you not only, as I know you will, provide the funds with which to build a new heavy cruiser to be called the Los Angeles, but please give us 1,000 of your girls to join the waves as well. Now let me get down to my canned speech. It is a source of real joy. That sounds like a canned speech, doesn't it? It is a source of real joy and satisfaction to me to participate with you in the inauguration of a campaign which will add another fine cruiser to the fleet. The Los Angeles, when she takes her place on the line, will add to both the power and the glory of the greatest fleet that ever sailed under the American flag. The ship you propose to provide will join a glorious company of fast, powerful cruisers whose might will be employed to extend the horizons of human liberty. We sail the seas in this greatest naval war in all history, not to extend our dominions, not to bring other peoples unwillingly under the yoke of our power, but to ensure that the liberties we enjoy and for which we are fighting shall be accessible to other peoples who are willing to fight to achieve them and willing to die to maintain them. We in America know too well the quality of liberty to make the mistake of thinking it can be given. It cannot be bestowed without effort of those who now do not enjoy it. We know from a bitter experience covering a century and a half that liberty must always be purchased at a price, and can only be maintained and preserved by those who are ever ready to meet the costs of its maintenance. In this war, we do not play the part of a Sir Galahad, riding forth to discover whom we may rescue from the toils of the tyrant. We are not dominated by an idealism aimed to salvage the lost liberties of other peoples. Our idealism is coupled with a realism that is the fruit of experience. Primarily, we are fighting for our own liberties and their maintenance. Our enemies are those evil forces in the world who would achieve world dominance by destroying liberty everywhere. Since success in such a purpose would involve the destruction of our own liberties, we are in this fight to the finish. And the only tolerable finish lies in the unconditional surrender of these enemies of human freedom. The lessons we have learned in the last 25 years have taught us that we cannot be safe and be free ourselves in a world where other peoples are all held in thrall. Consequently, in fighting for our own freedom, we fight for the establishment of a world in which other peoples can enjoy freedom if they possess the qualities necessary to establish that freedom and to maintain it. This, then, is the goal we seek: a world in which we shall be free, and a world in which other people can enjoy a like freedom, providing they have the qualities of mind and heart to achieve it and to maintain it. We have gone a long way since last I spoke in your city. Then, the foul treachery of Pearl Harbor was fresh in our memories. Then Japan had captured and subjected to her power an empire, rich in all those material resources she needed and coveted. Malaya had fallen, and Singapore had surrendered. The Dutch East Indies had been conquered. The Philippines were overrun, and Corregidor had surrendered. Australia girded her lines against impending attack. In Europe, Germany had wrought her will on a helpless continent. Under the iron Hitler heel, Poland lay prostrate. Norway was the victim of a treacherous surprise. Denmark was a prisoner. Luxembourg and the Low Countries had crumpled before the advancing German blitz. And France had fallen. Valiant Greece and Yugoslavia had been occupied. Russia was fighting a desperate battle for survival, and vast areas of her richest provinces were in the possession of the enemy. Everywhere men waited with fearful hearts to learn where the next blow would fall. Here in America, we strove at a desperate pace to get our house in order to meet the challenge. We had a one-ocean fleet to fight a naval war which spread over the seven seas. We had a modest merchant marine inadequate to transport overseas our exports in time of peace. We had begun to assemble an army, and it was made up almost entirely of untrained boys hastily summoned under the process of the Selective Service. Our industry, the greatest peacetime industry in the world, lacked the tools and the skills for the production of war materials. We had less than a half dozen shipyards competent to build combatant ships. We had the spirit and determination to fight with little to fight with. Contemplate that. With our present position, in the short space of a year and a half, from December 7th, 1941, despite all our blunders and mistakes, we have wrought a miracle. We have by far the most powerful fleet in the world in actual commission. By the end... By the end of 1943, we shall have increased that fleet over the fleet of 1942 by 60% in tonnage and 100% in numbers. We have transformed our inadequate peacetime merchant marine into the greatest wartime merchant fleet in all history, and we are adding to that fleet in spite of the depredation of enemy submarines by millions of tons. We have assembled an army of rising 6 million men, and they now are trained. And they have demonstrated their fighting power and prowess on battlefields that stretch from Guadalcanal to Attu in the Pacific to North Africa and the Mediterranean to the eastward. We have transformed our industrial plant so successfully and so swiftly that we have not only armed the vessels of this new fleet as ships have never been armed before, but we have put in the air under command of trained pilots the greatest armada that ever swept the skies. We have put in the hands of our army rifles, machine guns, artillery, tanks, and armored equipage that make it the best armed army in the world. And in addition to all this, we have supplied vital equipment and arms by the millions of tons to our British, to our Russian, to our Chinese, and to our French, and to our other allies. When we sum this total up, it seems incredible. Never has American genius in production shone so brilliantly. In In the last 2 years, we have written a saga that will compel the admiration of men everywhere, always. And while we were doing all this, we were far from idle in a military sense. We have halted the sweep of Japanese arms. For months, Tojo has been on the defensive. He appears to be busily digging in a frantic effort to preserve and hold the fruits of his early victories. I wrote this sentence. The warlords in Tokyo know not when nor where the next blow will fall, but they found out this morning. And since I came to this meeting, another message has reached me that other islands are now occupied by the American Navy and Marines. In North Africa, instead of Rommel threatening Cairo, our British allies, with a gallantry and a fierce courage equal to anything in British annals, have swept Rommel into utter defeat and unconditional surrender. It is a matter of solid satisfaction to us to know that in that victorious sweep, American airmen played a vigorous part, and that in its finish, an American army, under an American commander-in-chief, participated in one of the great decisive victories of this war. In the North Atlantic, where Hitler put his reliance upon his submarines to disrupt and destroy the convoys from this country, bearing essential supplies and new armies to Europe, we are in the midst of winning another great victory. That victory is not yet won, but this much at least I can tell you. The enemy confidently expected, and we gravely feared, that ship losses in the early months of this summer would equal, if they did not exceed, those of any like period since the war began. The score in March seemed to justify Hitler's hopes and our fears. And then something happened. Instead of mounting, ship losses decreased and decreased swiftly. June shows a score so good it seems incredible. Incredible not only in the insignificant size of our losses, equally incredible in the mounting scale of enemy submarines sunk. And no submarine is counted as sunk by either the British or ourselves if there lacks absolute proof of the kill. Again, I want to repeat that this fighting in the Atlantic with the sub is not yet won. Indeed, it never will be won completely while the war lasts. But if we contrast the situation now in the Atlantic with that which obtained when I was last in Los Angeles, the vast change thoroughly warrants the hope that we have our worst enemy, the sub, now where he is at least as worried over our next move as we are of his. Summed up, what I've been saying to you is that in this war, we have now seized the initiative. Possession of the initiative does not mean that the war has been won and that victory is just around the corner. There is nothing which would warrant any such optimism. The enemy, both east and west, is still in possession of the bulk of his strength and of most of the fruits of his early victories. We have yet a far and hard road to travel before victory is assured. It does mean, however, that we now and from now on can pick the time and place where battle will be waged And in military affairs, that means a great deal. The fact that Los Angeles, in this stage of the war, is inaugurating a campaign to provide a new cruiser for the fleet, which will help win the war, is in itself evidence that you believe there is a lot of hard fighting yet to be done, and that we must, all of us, give everything that is asked of us to ensure victory. Time does not permit me to attempt more than this. This review of what has transpired since last I came here indicates the degree of our readiness and exposes the fact of the stern fighting that lies ahead, and provides you with something of a summary of what has been accomplished in getting on with the war. We must learn to put first things first in a time of crisis. And the first thing for you and for me and for our country is to win this war. That we shall win it, I have no doubt. But I also have no doubt that it will test us as we have never been tested before. To steel our hearts and our bodies for this trial, let us never forget that we fight for those things which make life itself worthwhile and significant, the lack of which would, for most of us, make life itself an empty, futile thing. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Catherine Grayson will now sing God Bless America. Won't you join in the second chorus?
Chief Marlowe and the Roosevelt Operating Base Band to sing Stout-Hearted Men.
And so we come to the end and to the beginning. To the end of our meeting here in the Hollywood Bowl and the beginning of the Build the Cruiser Los Angeles campaign. On behalf of the Motion Picture Committee for Hollywood, Treasury Department, may I take this opportunity of saying thank you to the National Broadcasting Company, the Hollywood Bowl Association, and the Hollywood Victory Committee for their magnificent cooperation in making this occasion possible. And to you, who may be listening at points far removed from Los Angeles County, a parting thought. Won't you and each of you also buy at least one extra war bond during the month of July? Whether that money be used to build ships, planes, tanks, or guns, you may be sure of this. It is urgently needed to help build victory.
You have dreams, if you act, they will come true. So turn your dreams to a fact, it's up to you. If you have the soul and the spirit, never fear it, you'll see it through. Heart can inspire other hearts with their fire, for the strong obey when a strong man shows them the way. Give me some men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right. I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Oh, shoulder to shoulder, and bolder, they grow as they go to the fore. Then there's nothing in the world can hold or mar a plan. When stout-hearted men can stick together, man to man. Give me some men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Oh, shoulder to shoulder, and bolder, they grow as they go to the fore. And there's nothing in the world can walk on far apart.
As this vast crowd starts to leave the Hollywood Bowl in Hollywood, California, we're entertained by Lieutenant Rudy Valley and his Coast Guard Orchestra. Launching the Build a Cruiser Los Angeles campaign, featuring an address by Secretary of the Navy, Frank Knox. Edward G. Robinson was master of ceremonies, and during the course of the broadcast, you also heard Cecil B. DeMille, Bing Crosby, Dinah Shore, and Katherine Grayson. Music this evening was by the combined service bands of the Navy, Coast Guard, and Marine Corps under the direction of Lieutenant Rudy Ballard. Your announcer is Ken Carpenter.
The National Broadcasting Company has presented this special program featuring Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox from the Hollywood Bowl in conjunction with the United States Treasury Department. This is the National Broadcasting Company.